Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Big Move podcast. I am your host, Em, from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. And today I am sitting here in Reward Style HQ in London. I'm excited to be here with our first male guest, Johan Christiansen. After stepping on a plane for the first time ever 14 years ago to move to Japan from Sweden, Johan has since moved across the world to live in most major cities. After working at Blog Love in New York, before influencer was even a term, he now heads up the European division for the influencer development team at the world's largest influencer platform, Reward Style and Like to Know It, with 45,000 bloggers and content creators worldwide. As well as this, Johan has a perfume blog and is constantly seeking ways to use tech to bring people together in the real world. Johan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me and hosting me at your office. And as I said, you are our first male guest. The pressure is on.
I know, the pressure is on by this being my first ever podcast episode I participate in as well.
So. You're going to be great. But I've been really excited about this. The podcast so far has been predominantly female focused, and not because we discriminate, just because it's just been very female led. But I'm excited to actually have you come on and give a male perspective to the whole digital influencer world. So excited to have you.
Sounds amazing. Thank you for having me.
So we'll jump into a couple quick icebreaker questions. Mm-hmm. So the first is, what is your favorite destination for a proper holiday?
So I've lived in many cities across the globe, and in reality, I probably should say something really cool and exotic and unknown. People are like, oh, what is this? I gotta Google this place. But I'm just in love with Tokyo, so if anyone ever listens and they go like, which is the destination that Johan wants me to go to, I would say Tokyo, hands down. It is such a dynamic city, and it's just, I always call it like a city on a city because, you know, there's the first floor of stores and restaurants and cafes, and then there's like five stories of more stuff. I mean, it's just one block is like a million stores and experiences, so.
Yeah, I hear the food scene is amazing there.
I would say the food scene is by far the best I've experienced in my life.
Okay,
and
wow.
For less money, you get so good food, and the service is amazing. I mean, the service is unbelievable, and I miss it every day, to be honest. But London is amazing, too.
Yeah.
Love the food here as well.
True. Okay, cool. Adding that to my travel list. Okay, second icebreaker question. What is your favorite London coffee shop? We're sitting above the Clerkenwell grind, but I don't want to jump to like conclusions here.
I should promote the locals, right? So I thought about this question a lot, and I was like, should I change it? Should I not change it? I don't have one, but I'll tell you one that I never visited.
Okay.
That could be my favorite go-to place, which is, I think it's called the Hostess Cafe. It's like a it's like a church made into a cafe, which is somewhere in London City. I'm not sure.
Okay, cool.
But basically, you enter it, and you get coffee, cookies, whatever you want, and you sit in a church
having
a latte, which is pretty, pretty badass.
You said it's called the Hostess?
I'm not sure.
Okay, we're gonna find it. It's okay. We'll link it in the show notes.
I've been there once. It was closed. I'm like, the mystery continues. Just my infatuation is gross as I can't get to it.
Yeah, fair. Okay, cool. So we'll kind of get into your background, mm-hmm. where you're from, cities that you've lived. So first and foremost, you're born and raised in Sweden. Can you tell us where exactly you grew up and kind of what life was like growing up there?
Absolutely. So I'm from a third largest city in Malmo, which is still a pretty small town called Malmo. And it's next to Copenhagen. And my upbringing was really amazing, to be honest. It was very simple, kind of like how you imagine the perfect life as a kid is. Like, you rollerblade, you eat pizza when you shouldn't, you eat candy when you shouldn't. Like, and Sweden was a really terrific place to grow up in. But looking back at it, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty simple life, really.
Okay, cool. You know? What was the name of your town?
Malmö.
Okay, perfect. And it was that like north, south, east? I mean, not that I know Sweden well, but like geographically.
So Sweden is north, as many people probably know. And the size of it is like almost the size of California or Japan, actually.
Oh, wow.
The same size. So I'm from the south, so we have very like flexible seasons, whereas in the north they have two seasons, which is like summer or winter.
Oh, wow, okay. So a bit more drastic.
So pretty intense. I was there once, and having light all day, for instance, during summer is mind-blowing. Like,
oh,
it just, like,
gosh,
challenges your perception of reality.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of reminds me of London in the summer, because it doesn't get dark until, like, what, like 10 sometimes?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, like July, August. So you've lived in cities virtually all over the globe. Before we recorded, you told me every city you've lived, and I was like typing. We had a phone call, and I'm like, oh my God, like this is overwhelming. It's amazing. Can you give the audience a quick rundown of like the cities that you've lived?
Absolutely. So I'm from Malmo, and then when I was about 21, I moved to Tokyo, which was my first time flying. And I was there for about 6 years. And during that time, I also lived in Beijing for a little bit. So Tokyo, Beijing. And then after graduating from university in Tokyo, I moved to New York because it's New York and it's pretty cool. And I was there for about 3 years. And I moved to LA. I was in LA for about a year and a half. Then I moved back to Malmö, my hometown. I was like, I'm done with traveling. I've been outside for 10 years. My family's wondering if my membership is still accurate with my family, basically, at that
Fair.
Time. It took me about a month in Malmö. Then I was recruited to Stockholm, which is about a six-hour train ride north of Malmö. So I was home for like a month. My family was like, well, there you go. You're leaving us again.
Yeah.
And I was in Stockholm for about 2 years. And after 2 years in Stockholm, I moved to London. So I've been in London for about a year soon, which
wow.
is crazy. Yeah.
How was your experience working and living in America in comparison to Europe?
I say it was really interesting. It's very intense in America. I think people wear their opinions more on their sleeves, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does, actually.
It's a very open conversation, which is great. And I feel like I'm the product of like a hybrid experience between Sweden and Japan that are very kind of careful in the way you communicate, whereas in America you're very direct.
Right.
But I loved it. But I would caveat this by saying I worked for a Swedish company in New York and LA, so I had a bit of a good starting point.
Yeah, that's nice. So you probably felt at home in many ways, whilst also having that like unique American working experience.
Absolutely. So a lot of our founders were Swedish, in a Swedish company, and then most of my colleagues were American. So it was a good balance between Swedes always wanting to take breaks and Americans always wanting to work. So it was a good balance.
Yeah. So you finally came back to Europe and then you came to London to work. So what ultimately made that decision for you or brought you back to London?
I mean, I've worked in influencer marketing for the past 5 or 6 years, I would say, which is quite a long time if you think about the lifetime of influencer marketing. And during that time, I always looked into Reward Style from the outside, and Reward was always like the company that was like leading the charge and always like being 2.5 steps ahead of everyone else. So when I was working in Stockholm, there was an opening for a role at the London office, and I wasn't actually looking for a job at the time, but I was like, it's Reward Style, like, I gotta take my chance. It's kind of like the prom queen. It's like the one you always wanted to ask out, be a little bit afraid. So I applied and they got back to me and I was like, oh my God, what's going on?
That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
Okay, amazing. And then so how long have you been back in London?
I think I moved here on the 30th of October, and I started working here on the 1st of November last year.
Okay.
So I got to see the winter, and then it was amazing also to live here through the summer as well. And you know, you have, when you move to a place or you visit a place, you have this preconceived notion about how it is. And now I know for a fact that it doesn't always rain in London. It's actually quite a nice weather here.
It is. It's a common misconception, and I get this all the time coming from America. People are like, how are you handling the weather? And I'm like, actually, the winters are quite mild, and I come from the Northeast in America where it's absolutely freezing, freezing winters. So actually quite appreciate it. But you're right. Everyone just thinks it's constantly raining. And by the way, it's not always like actually torrentially raining. It's like sprinkles, it stops, like it comes and goes. Yeah.
It's nice. Also, the weather in Northeast is challenging. I remember like when I was my last year in New York, there was such a frigid winter. I was just telling myself, I was like, no, I can't. This is like survival. Like anyone who survives winter in New York, it's like, that's a...
It's true. You actually need like the huge puffy jacket situation, gloves, hat, all of the things. Like it's like not even a question.
Yeah, it's not a fashion statement anymore as much as it is in London. Yeah. It's like, this is survival, guys. Like we got to stay warm and keep our blood like pumping.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there things that you love about life in London or things that maybe you miss from Sweden?
I think the difficult thing about moving to different cities is that you fall in love with certain things in each city. And I can today miss the weather in LA. I mean, that lifestyle that you can have there is amazing. I miss Tokyo for so many different reasons. Just like walking around, getting lost in Tokyo is one of the most amazing things you can do in life. And I highly recommend it. I miss the kind of the hobbit nature of Swedes. We're very kind of relaxed and I like to take like second breakfasts and stuff. And
right.
That's good. But I feel like London has this like amazing ability to merge a lot of things into one. I feel like there's such a like a real diversity going on here. So I can kind of find my water, what's called water holes.
Okay.
For anything in this city. So it's really
What's a water hole?
Like a water hole, like if I have an urge for like really good Japanese ramen, for instance, they have the best ramen here in London, like one of my favorite restaurants. Or if I want to get barbecue, there's like a great barbecue place. So and I'm guessing I'm talking about food here, but
I'm a foodie. It often comes up. It's cool. Yeah. What's your favorite ramen place? Actually, I am curious about that.
In London, there's only one. It's called Ippudo.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. I had it in New York, but I really want to go to the one in London.
It's better here. I went to the one in New York and it wasn't as impressive.
Oh, okay. It's actually really good to know.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So getting right into your career background, where did your career really start for you? Maybe your first job?
I think there's two ways of answering that question. I think one of my most interesting first jobs is actually in the hospital in the ER in Sweden when I was like 19. So backstory is my mom worked as the head of the department and she was like, do you want to get a job? We have an opening. It's perfectly suited. Little did I know, a 19-year-old would be constantly in shock because you experience so much at an ER. I mean, it's just, I don't know where to begin.
I can't imagine.
No, I mean, I think at an age of 19, it forced me to grow about 10 years in a year. And after that time, after seeing people in accidents or getting ill or having diseases that are incurable, it really taught me to appreciate life. And sometimes I just look at myself and I'm just happy I can walk. You know, I'm grateful for having like all my fingers left. Like simple things like that you don't really reflect on very much or very often.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing to
do. Wow. Yeah. So what made you transition sort of into the whole digital world? Like were you kind of scarred, decided not to become a doctor one day or?
I think doctors are amazing, but that was never what I wanted to do. And then afterwards, I traveled. I think that really spurred on my ability to make really poor life decisions or very kind of unprepared life decisions. So afterwards, I moved to Tokyo. I just told myself one day, I'm like, after this, I'm going to move to Tokyo. I just signed up for a class I couldn't, or a course, a school I didn't afford. And I was in Tokyo 6 months later and never returned to my hometown. Well, my career in influencer marketing actually started in New York at a place called Bloglovin.
Okay, cool.
And really by accident. I mean, back in the day, so we have to go a little bit of time travel here. 5 years ago, there wasn't really an influencer industry. There was no statistics about how it was growing, like how much you can make. It was just bloggers. And everyone knew bloggers had reach, but brands didn't know what to do with them. But at the time, there was a company called Bloglovin that had kind of understood that people read a lot of blogs. So we have to make a service for everyone to read all of these blogs at one place when they update. And by chance, my brother's wife's cousin was on the founders. And we had hung out a little bit in New York. And he calls me one day, and I was at a job. I was working at a beauty retail store in New York. And at that time, I knew about the company, about the team. He calls me up and he says, hey, we might have a job for you at our company. And I'm like, great, I'll take it. And he just laughs. He's like, I haven't told you what it is, so what do you have to do? And I'm like, that's true. I'll take it. I just wanted to work with these guys because they were so amazing and what they did was so interesting. Like, I have no idea what this was about.
Yeah.
But later on, I got the job, met their CEO, had an actual formal interview and started building on their community team. And that was my first ever encounter with influencers. It was a list of about 10,000 influencers. My boss left me. He said, your only target here is to become friends with all of them. And I'm like, great, this is going to be
oh my God, that's overwhelming.
Yeah. And at the time, it was really big influencers that now are seen as brands, basically.
Yeah, they've absolutely.
Gone on to create their own fashion lines, beauty lines, jewelry lines, and all kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. 5 years ago, you're right. Like the OGs, right? They now have clothing lines at Nordstrom and huge retailers. And you kind of saw, I guess you've seen really like influencer marketing and bloggers kind of at their infancy, and flash forward to now, and so much has changed.
Now it feels like it's so established. And even in Sweden now you have school courses on how to become a YouTube influencer. And that to me is super interesting. I mean, that just shows how established it has become.
Yeah, absolutely. So before you and I decided to record this episode, we spoke about how it takes risk to create opportunity. So can you kind of talk, I mean, I guess you did just mention it, how you kind of took a leap of faith with these guys. You said you didn't even have like a formal interview yet, but can you talk a little bit more about how that's kind of been an integral part of your career path?
I think leaping in situations that are unknown is the best you can possibly do in life. I think overall, I don't know if I'm going to answer this question specifically, but I feel like today we're so plagued with overthinking our decisions. And I didn't know it was what influencer marketing was going to become when I joined it, but I trusted the people, so I jumped in. And that's always served me well. I trusted reward style, so I basically left my entire life. I mean, I was settled down in Stockholm. I'd bought a place. I was like, I was good.
Right.
And then this opportunity came on, and I was like, this is like a new city, and a new country, new company. I have no idea what's going to happen, but you just got to take the plunge.
Right.
I think at some point, you have to stop trying to figure out the future for yourself and jump into it and then trust yourself that you can make it happen. And there's a really great quote by Reid Hoffman, one of the founders of LinkedIn and maybe even PayPal, I'm not sure. But he always says that like building a startup is like taking a free fall out of a cliff and building the plane on the way down.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
That's one of the best things I can say to anyone who's like thinking about a decision, is just do it. I mean, I haven't always succeeded either. I mean, going to Beijing was also like a leap of faith. It didn't work out. I mean, there's a ton of failures in my history. Mm-hmm. If you look back at it, you can kind of nitpick and choose the best stories. But I mean, I've been down a lot. Yeah. But you get up always. You figure out a way. And I think also just like leaning on people around you is like amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Like you learn and you grow and you tweak. And I mean, that's like kind of what being an adult is, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And in your career, you've also had to adapt both to new companies and job roles, but also all of these new cities and all of these cultures that you've kind of been like thrown into. How have you kind of been able to do that? What feels like very like naturally?
I think taking a humble stance towards it and listen. I think there are some people I've met in my career that talk a lot. They're very abrasive. They're like, they enter a room, they have to own it. I lean a lot on my Swedish culture maybe, mm-hmm. or Japanese culture, a little background.
Sure.
To just listen. And that's how I've learned. I've realized that I don't know the most. Therefore, the more I listen, the more I will learn. And if I talk, my professor in business always used to say, if you're talking, you're not learning. Mm-hmm. And I carry that philosophy with me even in my current job, whereas I'm a director, which is like a great title to have, and I'm very proud of it. And it comes with hard work. But mm-hmm. I keep telling everyone that I talk to in the industry and like friends and family about like how do you grow? And I say, further you up in the career ladder, mm-hmm. the more you have to lean on your team and listen and manage through them, because the higher up you are, the further away from the clients.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I think that's listening. Such a good tip. I don't think that we do that enough, is like we sit back and listen, because I think often, I guess depending on your work environment, like egos can take over. You think your way is the right way, or that you're only going to get something done if like you speak up and you do it. But I think there is something really to be said for that. So I think that's a great tip.
Yeah. Thank you.
So do you have like a biggest tip of advice for someone maybe looking to leave their current job or make a career move or even like move to that new city and like take that leap?
I do, which is just do it. It sounds so simple. It's not going to be simple. If you look back at my history, I've lived in many different cities across the world. But even coming to London, it was really tough. No matter what you do, how much you prepare, you can never plan for every kind of event, situation. And you always start from zero. But you got to be comfortable by doing that. When I moved to London, I had no idea where I was or what I should be doing. I didn't know many people, which is like always the hardest thing about moving.
Yeah, 100%.
But you got to embrace it in a certain way. Like there is something beautiful about starting from scratch and then seeing where it takes you. I mean, looking back 10 months since I moved here, I'm probably a very different person when I was when I first moved. And I did all the wrong things. I went to the world's best cocktail place and I ordered a beer. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. They looked at me like, we have two cans of beer. And I'm like, what do you mean? Isn't this like a pub in London? And I probably should never return there. But, you know, make these small mistakes and it's fine because you're learning. And after a while, you get used to it. And then, I mean, big cities always have mystery to them. But when you're first here, like, you don't know where the limits are. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think you said this earlier and before we talked too, like, people are willing to help. And, like, you have to put yourself out there, let them know you might be new to the city or what have you, but you'd be surprised, like, who will take you up on that coffee or that beer or, you know, whatever.
There's something that Steve Jobs said. It's so true. He said, inherently, people want to help people who ask for help. And it's just, it's so true. If someone comes to me on the street and needs help, I will probably help them. I'm helping a guy I met at Paul Smith while looking at suits. And he runs a little startup or a little effort. He wants to make leather jackets out of PET bottles. And we just started talking and he attached himself to me. He's like, can I come to you for like questions? And I'm like, what do you want to ask me? What can I do to help you?
But
I'm like, sure. If I can help you, can I make the world in a better place by, you know, making a sustainable enterprise, maybe, then do it.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs' quote is always, as an example, he calls IBM back in the day when they were first building Apple, and he asked for some parts, and he always says, little did they know I was going to build Apple, but they helped him by sending a few parts. So
yeah, that's
true. Don't be ashamed to ask for help if you need it. It makes you stronger, and then people respect you for it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. So we'll kind of get into reward style in more detail. I am very familiar with reward style. I've been using the platform. I know I'm biased, but for many years, almost my first year, I think, into blogging, I was accepted onto the Like to Know It platform, which is kind of a big deal when you're a newer influencer. So I guess for those in the audience that maybe aren't as familiar with reward style, can you tell us more about what the company does and who it services?
Absolutely. So in short, RewardStyle is the world's largest influencer monetization platform. So we build tools for influencers. And I'm really proud of saying that because that's not always the case for a lot of companies. There's a lot of influencer companies out there, but not all of them build for influencers specifically. And we've been doing that for 8 years. So we've been doing that even since before influencer marketing was a thing. And we're built by influencers as well. And that's something that I'm really proud of because the more success we have always means that our influencers have more success. And what we do on a day-to-day basis essentially is just think about ways to help influencers. That's all we do. Mm-hmm. I'm still amazed over the team that I am managing because our entire job, like job description says, help our influencers grow and become successful as businesses. That's what we do.
Yeah. And then can you also tell us a little bit about Like to Know It?
Sure. So Like to Know It is, I'm pretty sure it's the world's first and only influencer app built for influencers specifically. So I think we as a company realize there's so many tools out there and so many channels to create content on, but none of them are designed for influencers predominantly. So our founders built a tool that is now Like to Know It app for influencers to be able to meet with consumers on the platform. So everything you do as an influencer will be elevated and built for you. So there's no algorithm changes, and it's all going to be built for your success, basically, as an influencer.
Totally. And then you guys also came out with the Like to Know It app, which was a fairly new venture. How long has that been out?
Duck Talent app has been out for about like a year and a half. Two and a half years.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
So Duck Talent was first an add-on to the Instagram business.
Yep.
And then it became an app afterwards. And that's because we realized that attaching yourself to social media channels, while amazing, isn't always the best thing long term. So we really wanted to reel it in and build something with the influencer at the center of things. And that's become the Duck Talent app. And I'm really excited about where it's going to be in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when we talk too, you mentioned reward style enables women to become entrepreneurs, which I know is such a powerful message, especially for this audience. Can you kind of elaborate a bit on how reward style has been able to do that for bloggers and content creators?
Absolutely. And it's going back to the beginning of things where people were blogging and just doing it for fun. And they were creating content that was hugely valuable to the brands they were promoting, but didn't get paid for it. So people would have the blogging or influencing as kind of like a side hustle. And when reward style came into the picture, we allowed content creators and influencers to actually make money from their content, which enables them to actually quit their jobs. And we have some examples of people in the UK who are air hostesses, for instance, who were also featured on the podcast quite recently. And now they can kind of do this full time. And that to me is really cool because we're allowing people to do what they love full time and then inspire and influence other people. And I think through influencers, you can go on so many journeys and find travel destinations and fashion influence and inspiration and all kinds of things. So
yeah, absolutely. And it's like not only enabling women right to quit their day job, but too like women that are maybe working full time, but then they have this side hustle and they want to monetize it. And their first question is like, how can I do that? It's like to know it is kind of hits the nail on the head with that.
Absolutely. And I think like to know it will be the ubiquitous thing with influencer success in the future. So, you know, with the like to know it app, you can basically create a profile if you're with the reward style platform and you can start sharing your content there. You can tag all kinds of products in your images from one of our 4,500 retailers. So you really have, and you really have full control of your profile as well. So you can, people can follow you. You can bring in your audience. People can follow you inside the app as well. We have a very vivid and influencer content hungry, you know, 4 million community of users. So there's a chance just not just to monetize, but you can actually build your own new kind of following within the app as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is your specific role and I guess your current like day-to-day like here in London?
My current role is I'm director of the influencer development team. So what I do on a day-to-day basis is help my team help the influencers and make sure that my team gets what they need to do what they need to do. And really the way I see my role is like I'm the person who gets the team what they want and remove barriers from any kind of friction. But we also, on a day-to-day, it's such a hard question. I remember back in the day when I was looking for a job and I would read interviews of people that I looked up to about what to do day-to-day and they said all kinds of things. I'm like, what do you mean? You have to do like Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
You have a set schedule. But it's so varying. And in this industry that's changing so quickly, I mean, we've gone through so many of the, you know, the in sort of social media channels as well. We always try to think two steps ahead with what we do and then try to kind of distill all of our observations and learnings into actionable strategies for our influencers. And that is very hard to kind of just like say, like, what's the one recipe? But it's really understanding where the market is going, where it is, and then making sure influencers have the best kind of strategy at hand at all times.
Definitely. And this is probably a really loaded question, but how has social media kind of impacted the reward style business?
I mean, social media is great. I think it's one of the best amplification tools for influencers out there. But if I'm allowed to borrow like a learning from my past, is that the one thing I want influencers to walk away from in a conversation with me is that you have to own your own channel. Mm-hmm. You have to own your own channel. Make sure you're aligned with companies that have your best interests at heart. So an example is if I go back 5 years in time, at that point, Instagram wasn't what Instagram is today, and Facebook pages was like the thing. And then in one day, Facebook just changed their algorithms and no one had any reach anymore. And I became a therapist mm-hmm. for influencers who were you know, sad and angry about, you know, spending years building up 600,000 followers on their page and now they couldn't even reach 5% of them. And I think this is like a really crucial lesson for influencers that you have to be very mindful of like where you put your content and where mm-hmm. you cultivate your following mm-hmm. because it will matter greatly for your longevity. So I always say, have a channel you own. Blog is usually the easiest one.
And then blog or website, right?
Yeah, yeah, blog or website. And then align yourself with a company that has your best interest at heart that will grow with you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And differentiate, I'm sure, across platform as well. So like absolutely. You said, Facebook changing that one tweak, like, yeah.
But imagine how detrimental that was. But we see the same kind of things happening with other social media sites today because companies running social media sites essentially might be ad businesses and then they're serving ads and that's their main goal. So
yeah, absolutely. What do you kind of see as the future for influencer marketing?
It's a great question. I believe we're just basically working on the tip of the iceberg at the moment. I believe everyone's going to be an influencer, essentially. I think we already are, whether we're getting money from it or not. Mm-hmm. But I think today, if I say I'm working with influencers, people inherently just thinks fashion, beauty, females, mm-hmm. and influence is so much more. I think influence, we're seeing the power of it today with how it will sway elections. I think it will become very broad as tech allows brands to work with more influencers. And I think it will also become more results-driven and data-driven. So being able to talk with confidence to brands mm-hmm. about like what kind of statistics and metrics you can drive in terms of sales, clicks, engagement, all that kind of stuff is going to be crucial as well.
Yeah.
So really as an influencer, what you should be doing today is like try to think of yourself as a business and ask yourself which company allows you to make money, but also mm-hmm. gives me a lot of transparency in terms of the data I can then utilize to like build on my own business.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. I think we're seeing a change in the industry already with agencies and brands. They're a lot smarter and they're asking us for their metrics. Like I had a brand the other day say to me, so like, what's your conversion rate like? And I actually sent them my reward style analytics because that's the easiest way for me to send them all of these numbers over multiple years because I've been with the platform. So it's like to have that in your back pocket, I think is so important. You're right. We need to be really smart about how we're driving sales, how we're driving clicks for said brand and how we could do it for a future campaign.
Yeah. And lean on the platforms you work with. So with Reward Style, here everyone has someone they can reach out to at any given point. I mean, my team is always on standby to help people understand things better, but also give them strategy. I think that is an amazing resource to have because I think at every turn, influencers are asking themselves, like, how can I grow? How can I work with mm-hmm. brands? And what do I do? And we, you know, as an example, we had one influencer that was paying her friend to understand social media better. And she came over here and she's like, do you guys do this? And we're like, yes, we do this for free. Once you're a member, you get a lot of benefits and take advantage of that.
Yeah.
It's what we want to do. We want to help you grow. And it doesn't matter if you're someone who's just starting out, has mm-hmm. some traction.
Yeah.
If you're on the platform, reach out, say hi, we'll help you grow.
Yeah. Do you have a couple like quick tips on like for someone who is on the platform or aspiring to be on the platform? Like, is there like a few tips on how to best utilize the reward sound, like to know what platform?
I would say hands on contact us because it's so diverse today. Our platform offers so many different tools and ways to monetize everything from blog widgets to like how you use like to know what app the best mm-hmm. to like how do you utilize our links to monetize your Instagram, your YouTube. It's just so widespread today. And mm-hmm. I think that's really the core value of what my team does here at Reward Style is offer that customized best practice kind of strategy session with you. So don't be shy. People mm-hmm. are surprisingly shy here in Europe.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
So just reach out.
So reach out.
Ask questions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Also, think about yourself long term. Like where you are today was not going to matter in 2 years. It's mm-hmm. probably going to be growing a lot. And really question who you want to work with long term and where you share content as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you working on anything exciting or any upcoming initiatives for RewardCell that you want to share?
I mean, yes.
No pressure.
So we're always working on Like to Know It app, because Like to Know It app, essentially what it is, it's just a tool built for influencers. So our ambition isn't just to have influencers being able to upload and tag content with product and make money from it, but also to like really nurture our influencers. Mm-hmm. So I would say from a consumer standpoint, in the app, you can probably see a lot of things change soon, mm-hmm. in terms of like how you discover and find really great content and really great influencers. And influencers will probably see some growth as well, in addition to what they have today.
Okay, cool. So I also wanted to quickly touch on the Like to Know It podcast, which I am loving so far, by the way. And you guys just did like a summer abroad segment, which I especially loved because it was all UK bloggers kind of sharing their stories. So such a good one. But for the audience, what is kind of the premise of the podcast, and what can listeners expect to hear kind of in the future from you guys?
Yeah. So I'd like to know what Influencer Radio launched in spring, summer this year, with season one being recorded at the annual RewardCell, the conference. And our summer spin-off series coincided with Amber's visit to the UK, which I love, by the way. Don't take this for granted, but having our founders coming out into the field and working and doing the job is amazing. And to me, it's very inspiring to see, because they're giving away what is most valuable to them, which is their time.
Yeah.
Especially having, you know, three kids and still hustling. I mean, I don't know
how. I don't know how she does it either.
I have no really idea, but it's inspiring nonetheless.
Yeah, yeah.
But the podcast essentially takes a deeper dive into the lives of influencers, exploring their amazing journeys to becoming the world's most amazing entrepreneurs that they are today, as well as their creative inspirations. And I think this is something that we love to do, and I love that we're doing it, but we're really lifting success stories to everyone else and help our new kind of influencers understand that it takes a while to grow, and the people who are really huge today, mm-hmm. they all have stories of how they started, how they were growing from zero following and had full-time jobs and doing this as a side hustle and then becoming mm-hmm. what they are today. So
yeah, absolutely. Really cool. It is inspiring, 100%. Yeah. So as a last question, are there any kind of resources or business books or podcasts or just anything you love or find kind of motivating inspo from?
Yeah, I think one of the things that everyone should listen to that wants to get into tech or business is a podcast actually called Masters of Scale.
Cool.
By Reid Hoffman. I think I mentioned him in the past. But this podcast essentially takes a deeper dive into, you know, what Facebook did to grow, what Instagram did to grow, by interviewing the founders. And, you know, tell me another resource where you can kind of go one-on-one almost with the founders of mm-hmm. the world's kind of leading tech platforms. It's really inspiring, and I always come away learning a thing or two,
yeah.
or having a kind of actionable insight. So,
okay.
Massive Scale, really good. If you're really going to dig deep, I would say The Effective Executive by a guy called Peter Drucker, who's a renowned management consultant. Wrote books until he was like 96, just didn't stop. But it's amazing. It's like very deep into how to become effective in your life. But I think it applies to a lot of people, and you shouldn't stray away. No matter where you are in your like life journey or career journey, you should like try to get as much knowledge from the best resources possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, amazing. We're going to link out to those podcasts. Thanks for those. I feel like I kind of needed some new ones anyway.
Okay.
Selfishly. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was such a great convo. Before you go, though, where can everyone keep up with you, find RewardCell, all of that stuff?
So I'm on Instagram, as everyone else. You can just find me by instagram.com/KristensenJohan. And feel free to DM me about any questions. Don't be shy, guys.
It's brave of you. Thank you again. And thank you guys all for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And we will catch you all next time. See ya.